Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to our full year 2010 results presentation. If we just go through what the order of the day will be, after a few words of introduction from me, John will take us through a business review, Jim will take us through the financial review, and then Clive will say some words on strategic development, and then we will move to Q's and A's. Before we do so, can I just make sure everybody turns off or puts on silent their mobiles and their BlackBerrys? Thank you. By way of an introduction then, I think there are two real points that come out of that summary. The first is that, and I said this on the 23rd of February, and I reiterate it now, we remain absolutely confident of being able to deliver the mid-teen returns on this project without making further acquisitions. The second point, I think, is that in increasing the dividend by 15%, a one-step-up increase, that's demonstrating absolutely the board's confidence in the performance, the underlying performance and cash-generative ability of the underlying business. With those two comments, I shall move on and hand on to John.
Thank you, Mike. Well, good morning, everybody. As Mike has said, the UK Life project is on track to create a UK life insurance business which has a strong and sustainable cash position, has profitable new business in selective markets, and an integrated, cost-efficient operating platform. There are three overlapping phases to our UK Life project: acquisition, integration, and value delivery. The board said on the 23rd of February that it was confident that the company will meet the mid-teen target returns from the UK Life project without the necessity of making further acquisitions, a matter that Mike has just referred to. This conclusion has shifted the focus of Resolution's activities towards the second phase of the project, that of integration, which also includes optimizing the business model of the Friends Provident Friends Life business. Of course, we continue to follow closely the activities of other life insurers in the UK market, since we have a responsibility to shareholders to bring them acquisition opportunities which would be creative to the returns from the UK Life project. The weight of our focus on the UK project, which by the way, remains as committed and intense as it has been since the launch of the project in August 2009, has nonetheless shifted to the integration phase. On 23rd of February, Clive spoke about the options for realizing value from the project. These take a number of forms, and it's possible that as we assess options for optimizing the business model during phase two, we also identify interim steps to realize value for shareholders, which would mean that we are not reliant on a big bang event to bring a close to the project and crystallize returns for shareholders. 2010 was an important and successful year for Resolution. Building on the acquisition of Friends Provident in November 2009, the company announced the acquisition of both AXA's UK Life business and Bupa Health Assurance, and then completed the AXA deal in September for a consideration of 2.75 billion pounds. The aggregate consideration of acquisitions completed to date is 4.9 billion pounds, representing some 67% of acquired market consistent embedded value. Immediately following completion of the AXA UK Life deal in September, the company started an intensive program of separating and integrating the businesses, reviewing the strategic positioning of the business, and optimizing the cash and capital profile of the company. At our strategic update in February, we set out the focus of our product propositions: individual protection, group risk, corporate pensions, and annuities. We also set out distribution strategies, the target returns for each business line, and underscored the company's confidence in the 400 million pound annual cash target referred to when we announced the AXA transaction last June. In January this year, we announced the appointment of Andy Briggs as the CEO of Friends Provident Holdings. We expect Andy to join the group in July. Trevor Matthews, the current CEO, will step into a new role as Vice Chairman focused on external relationships. This ensures a smooth succession of leadership with continuity through to the conclusion of the project and value realization for shareholders. Which then brings us to today and the presentation of the group financial results for 2010. It is apparent that 2010 was a year of critical development and transition for the group. While investors may wish to carefully analyse the results of Lombard and Friends Provident International as businesses which have a stable and successful operating platform, I would caution against drawing too many conclusions from the results of the UK, other than to observe the continued substantial contribution made by the surplus emerging from the in-force book and the need to restructure new business, a matter which has been addressed in the strategic review. We will provide periodic updates on the implementation of the strategic review, and I look forward to Andy Briggs providing his input to shareholders on such occasions. I intend to focus my remarks on four key themes: strong cash generation, the stable and long-term profitability of the UK in-force book, the clear path towards restructuring UK new business, and the important contribution of the non-UK businesses. The cash and capital position of the group at the end of 2010 strengthened significantly from that at 31st December 2009. Available shareholder cash increased 109% from £510 million at the end of 2009 to £1,067 million at the end of 2010. Resolution prioritises the emergence of cash, both from operational activities and from efficient capital management, as the essential source of value for shareholders, and the doubling of available shareholder cash during the year has, of course, therefore been a positive development. A dividend of £300 million paid following the RIE testing has contributed to this strengthened cash position. The group now moves forward with a strong existing cash position and with expectations that operational cash will strengthen further and significantly as a strategic review is implemented, and the targeted reduction of £200 million per annum in new business strain is delivered. The capital position has also strengthened, with the IGD, or the IGCA surplus, more than doubling over the year to £2,317 million. This has been positively impacted by a transfer of £772 million following the RIE test, and Jim will talk about the RIE in much more detail in his presentation in a moment. The board's dividend policy has been to carry forward into Resolution Limited the dividend level per share previously adopted by Friends Provident PLC, and to note that the board will keep under review the appropriateness of the company moving to a growing dividend by the end of the UK Life project. On the basis of the cash position disclosed in the 2010 results and its confidence in the delivery of improved operational cash generation as the strategic review is implemented, the board has proposed to rebase the dividend by increasing the 2010 final dividend to 12.57 pence per share, an increase of 15% from the previous guidance. The board is also providing guidance that the full year for 2011 dividend will be 18.85 pence per share, locking in the 15% rise across the full year. As I said previously, the cash and capital position of the company disclosed in the 2010 accounts shows a significant increase on the prior year. Of course, this more healthy position is a key factor in our assessment of the optimal cash and capital structure, about which we will update the market further in May when the work has been completed. This update will include the board's thinking about the utilisation of the cash surplus. One of the key aims of the strategic review was to identify the measures needed to put the enlarged business onto a sustainable long-term footing by growing operational cash generation. Consistent with this, the board will continue to keep under review the appropriateness of the company moving to a growing dividend from the rebase level by the end of the UK Life project. At our February update, we set out targets for the company covering cash, returns, cost synergies, and new business strain. And these are shown on the right-hand column of the slide on the wall. All targets, with the exception of the distributable cash target, the DCT, are for 2013 and 2014 onwards, whereas the DCT is for 2011, this year onwards. And we plan to update this slide each 6 months to reflect current results, so the group's progress towards the targets will be visible to shareholders in the wider market. We have planned specific and identified actions to move the business from the baseline performance shown for 2010, and these actions underpin our confidence in meeting the targets set. As the figures show, the returns in 2010 of the protection business and of the corporate pensions business fall well short of the IRR targets. While 2010 was a year of tremendous change for the underlying businesses and relevant markets such as the mortgage market, which heavily influences protection sales, remained weak, the performance of the two main UK business lines are nonetheless disappointing and not acceptable on an ongoing basis. As the strategic review is implemented, the company will close unprofitable product lines, such as the AXA distribution bond, which absorbs very high cost of sales. The company will focus on writing business to achieve the company's return targets rather than writing for market share. We'll reduce expenses, migrate to more efficient and lower cost operating platforms, and overall improve the capital efficiency of the business. We set out in February the steps we are taking to put protection and corporate pensions onto a profitable and sustainable footing, and said that we were planning to move the protection business onto a single platform. We have since concluded that all of the company's new protection business will be written off the Bupa Health Assurance platform, a low-cost but efficient and scalable platform, and we are currently implementing the steps to effect that change, such as the announcement yesterday concerning the future of the Coventry office. This is a good example of how we plan to leverage the operating capabilities of the various platforms we have within the company and take the decisive steps towards the profitability targets we have set for the business. Jim will talk further about distributable cash generation. I will simply highlight that the £746 million you see on the slide for the 2010 baseline number benefits significantly from capital movements, which cannot be relied upon, of course, for the longer term, whereas the £400 million annual DCT is expected to be realised from operational cash flows. The FPH operating profit on an MCEV basis was £412 million in 2010, giving a return on embedded value of 8.3%. The two major contributors were £162 million operating profit in Lombard, which I'll come back to in a moment, and a £213 million operating profit in the Friends Provident UK business. The contribution of existing business continues to be a significant factor in the profitability of the UK operations, accounting for two-thirds of the operating profit in 2010. And as the strategic review is implemented over the next 2 years, the continuing strong and stable contribution from existing business will be a key source of future profitability. Lombard, led by David Steinegger, has had both an excellent year and at the same time successfully reduced the historic seasonality of new business and thereby improved the quality of the earnings which the company generates. Lombard is Europe's leading provider of estate planning solutions for high net worth individuals. It distributes its products through private banks and IFAs and has achieved a well-balanced spread of business throughout Europe. The factors behind Lombard's outstanding performance really come down to excellent management, strong relationships with distributors, excellent client servicing, maintenance of pricing discipline, efficient and no-waste approach to cost management, and investment in a hard-working and dedicated workforce. APE was up just over 10%, while the value of new business was up by 38% to £83 million. The IRR also rose strongly from 18.8% to 26.7%. These are record results for the company, following on the heels of hitherto record results in 2009. The particularly strong VNB performance is primarily due to a 50 basis points increase in margin to 2.7%, as sales, notably of larger cases, strengthened, while acquisition costs were held flat at the 2009 level. While Lombard is an insurance company, the earnings and risk characteristics of its business are more a blend of traditional life companies and asset managers, asset administrators. Perhaps four factors illustrate this point. First, clients or their advisors, not Lombard, select the asset allocation and, where appropriate, individual underlying investments. Two, while Lombard writes customized structures around client savings to help manage estate and succession issues, the risk landscape is different to many traditional life companies. Exposure to mortality risk is abated to some degree by the company's fee structure. Persistency is more reliable, as clients tend not to switch unless there is a change in the relevant fiscal system. And longevity is a benefit, not a risk. Third, the key driver of top-line performance and operating profitability is funds under management. This operational leverage is evident from how the increase in funds under management during 2010 from £12 billion to £15 billion an increase of 27%, has impacted on profitability. All of the company's major markets performed strongly, with the exception of Spain, where there were changes to inheritance tax legislation, which caused an increase in lapses. And fourthly, in assessing efficiency, Lombard's cost-income ratio is perhaps better compared to asset managers than it would be to life companies. Consistent with its strong operating performance, the company also improved its cash generation, which rose to £24 million for the year. The group is very supportive of the Lombard business and anticipates further progress in the future. The reported performance of the international business was mixed. Top-line growth was positive at 24%, with each of the main overseas businesses, Asia, Middle East and Germany, contributing well and reflecting a recovery from the prior year. Funds under management grew by 20% to £5.3 billion. A strong management focus on persistency has seen lapse rates fall following material adjustments to assumptions in the prior year, and cash generation increased to £23 million, boosted by new business strain being contained, notwithstanding the increase in sales. While IRRs on new business increased by 7%, the value of new business reduced by 9%. A number of assumption changes have been made to better reflect the expected profitability of new business written during the year. With the launch of new unit-linked savings products in April and the lasting impact of the management actions taken during 2010, the international business is well placed to capitalise on the growing wealth creation in its main markets, and in combination with Lombard, to deliver the £50 million dividend target by the end of 2013. So in summary, the group's cash and capital position is strong today, and we expect substantial improvements in operational cash emergence in the future on the basis of the management actions now being taken. We will update the market further in May. The stable and significant profitability emerging from the in-force book provides a secure source of value creation as the project progresses and as the business develops for the longer term. Third, the UK new business lines are being restructured and actions are already being implemented. We will update shareholders on the progress of the strategic review implementation on a regular basis. And fourth, the Lombard international businesses are well placed to deliver further growth in earnings and cash generation. Overall, the board and ROL are confident that the financial targets will be met and that, moreover, the mid-teen target return from the project will be delivered to shareholders. I'll pass over to Jim.
Thank you, John. Good morning, everybody. Whilst cash delivery has been a predominant focus for us in 2010, our core metrics clearly demonstrate the fact that we're essentially in the key acquisition phase of the UK Life project during the year. It must be every CFO's dream to announce an increase in operating profit of over 4,000%. However, this increase in IFRS operating profit and the 900+% increase in MCEV operating profit clearly reflect the acquisitions made in the last 2 years rather than mind-blowing operational profitability, despite what Clive might tell you. This is more clearly reflected by the group MCEV metric, which shows that we increased the size of the group by 87%, or £3 billion, during the year, this being funded by the £2 billion rights issue and after payment of a dividend of £136 million. The balance sheet at the end of the year has a strong capital base, with the group's IGCA surplus increasing by £1.2 billion in the year to £2.3 billion. This represented 228% of our group resource requirement compared to our target of 160%, an excess above target capital of £1.2 billion. Despite all the acquisition activity, we have remained very focused on cash, and at the year end, available shareholder cash has increased to over £1 billion from £510 million at the end of last year. And as John has already outlined, we're increasing the final dividend this year by 15% on the strength of our targeted £400 million distributable cash generation in Friends Life. For those of you who have attended a number of resolution presentations, this slide, or one like it, will be very familiar. It seems that I'm forever having to clarify why the headline comparatives are not easy to follow. 2010, as I'm sure you've already seen, is no exception, reflecting the reporting impact of the acquisitions we've made over the last 2 years. The Friends Provident businesses are only included in the 2009 comparatives for 2 months, but are included in 2010 for the whole year. The ex-AXA businesses are only included in 2010 numbers and then for only for 4 months. The Bupa Health Assurance results are not included at all, as the transaction only completed in January 2011. To try and provide some understanding of comparative performance, we've included full year 2009 comparatives for the Friends Provident businesses on IFRS and MCEV basis in our business review. Similarly, we've provided 2009 comparatives and 2010 full year numbers for the ex-AXA businesses on an IFRS basis, but are unable to do so for MCEV as these businesses have not previously reported on this basis. Looking forward, I'm afraid that we'll not be able to split 2011 actuals between these businesses as they're being fully integrated and will no longer exist as separate reporting entities. To that end, we have attempted to provide sufficient information with this preliminary announcement to enable an annualised group baseline to be established from all of our core metrics. We've also included the acquisition balance sheet for Bupa Health Assurance in the notes to the financial statements to provide a full picture of the baseline as the project moves to the optimisation phase. In addition to the changes in the makeup of the group, the IFRS operating profit, previously reported, has been subject to significant volatility as a result of investment performance. In common with a number of major life assurers, we've restated our IFRS operating reporting basis to remove this volatility and give a more consistent view of the operating performance of the business. The key changes we've made are set out in our business review. There is no impact on IFRS profit before tax from these changes. Had this restated definition of operating profit been applied in the first half-year results for 2010, it would have reduced the IFRS operating profit by $53 million, with a corresponding increase in short-term fluctuations in investment return. We believe this change establishes a clearer baseline for the combined business that will be far less susceptible to the volatility of investment performance and will enable us to better explain operating business performance in the future. That said, we recognise that trying to track IFRS profits is very difficult for this business. With an increasing charge for the DAC amortisation for post-acquisition business in operating profit, but the amortisation of AVIF for pre-acquisition business is excluded from operating profit. As part of our update in May, we will provide a further update on IFRS operating profit, setting out the impacts of acquisitions, the implications of IFRS accounting principles, and the underlying operating earnings. Turning then to the actual 2010 numbers. Overall IFRS operating profit has increased from $6 million in 2009 to $275 million in 2010. But as I've already intimated, this does not give any insight into the underlying performance. A more comparable view can be arrived at, however, by looking at the full year 2009 numbers, had they included Friends Provident for the full year, and comparing these to the 2010 results before the inclusion of the ex-AXA businesses. On this basis, profits amounted to $196 million in 2009 and increased by 15% to $225 million in 2010 before the inclusion of the ex-AXA businesses. This was predominantly driven by an increase of $58 million in the return from in-force business, reflecting the benefit of increased management charges on the back of rising equity markets and the growth of the in-force book in the international and Lombard businesses. The group's also benefited from slightly decreased new business strain. In the UK, new business strain was down primarily as a result of the continued reduction in costs, which remained well below the 2010 strategic target. The foregoing improvements year on year were offset by a number of impacts which reduced year on year operating profit by $37 million. The most material of these was a $39 million charge arising from the strengthening of annuity assumptions for the longevity in the annuity book. The inclusion of the ex-AXA businesses increased operating profits by $50 million, $71 million from the operating business for the 4 months, offset by $20 million of corporate costs, primarily increased debt interest arising from the transaction. To try and give you a better idea of the full year earnings, the $71 million contributed by the ex-AXA business would have been $199 million for the 12 months, a 38% increase in operating profit compared to the previous year, driven again mainly by the increase in the value of fees and funds under management in the unit-linked portfolios. Similarly, though, the increased corporate costs arising from the transaction, predominantly the debt, would have been a $63 million charge on an annualised basis. As with last year, our non-operating IFRS profits are dominated by the gains made in the acquisition stage of the project. In 2010, we made a gain of $883 million on the acquisition of the life business from AXA. This primarily reflects the MCEV valuation of the acquired in-force business, which essentially underpins the fair value valuation for IFRS purposes. A total charge of $428 million was made for the amortisation of acquired value of in-force business from the Friends acquisition in the previous year and of intangible assets, again, acquired at that time. This was in line with the expected runoff and no impairment charges were made. The other major contributor to the $820 million profit for the year was a shareholder tax credit of $108 million, which principally reflects tax relief for expenses under the UK's I-E regime. This is not, however, indicative of an annual run rate and includes a number of one-off impacts. It will, of course, also be affected by yesterday's budget in future years. Before moving on to MCEV, I'd just like to cover the strength of our IFRS balance sheet, which primarily reflects the holdings of our financial asset portfolio. The total financial assets of the group amount to nearly $100 billion. Of this total, the majority of the assets are in unit-linked or with-profit policyholder funds, where the policyholder bears the bulk of the investment risk, but equally bears benefits from the bulk of the reward. Approximately $9 billion of the funds are in non-profit and shareholder funds, including $7.2 billion of corporate bonds and asset-backed securities, the majority of which, 85%, are held at A grade or above, with only 4% of assets being below recognised investment grade or unrated. The exposure of the group to the debt of the governments of Greece, Ireland, Italy, Portugal and Spain is negligible, $7 million, with immaterial corporate debt in Ireland and Portugal and none in Greece. In Italy and Spain, the group holds only $339 million of corporate debt issued by financial companies which it considers to be of adequate financial strength. There were no defaults on government bonds or corporate debt held within the shareholder or non-profit portfolios during the year, reflecting the conservative nature of the portfolio and our focus on ensuring we safeguard shareholder assets. Moving on then to MCEV. Operating profit, which show a marked improvement on last year, reflects strong positive operational variances. Taking the approach we did with IFRS, we've divided the performance in the year between resolution and FPH for the full year and the ex-AXA businesses for 4 months. Turning first to the FPH businesses, the expected existing business contribution was broadly flat at $180 million, reflecting a lower reference interest rate and lower expected returns on corporate bonds backing annuity funds, offset by equity, corporate and property rates. The new business profits in the year were $152 million, up slightly on the previous year. This was driven by Lombard, who delivered an increase of 38% at an IRR of 26.7%. The core improvement in MCEV, however, comes essentially down to the improvement in operating variances in the year. The 2010 operating variances were $69 million positive, with positive experience in all business units. $38 million was contributed by positive morbidity, mortality and persistency experience, with the majority of the balance coming from management actions to restructure and enhance the cash profile of the in-force portfolio, net of an increase in the cost of capital arising from a change in capital management policy. The positive impact of operating variances was partially offset by a charge of $23 million for operating assumption changes, which included a charge of $47 million in respect of future rates of annuitant mortality improvement and a credit of $20 million in respect of improved expense performance in Lombard. Turning next to the AXA businesses, The expected return on in-force business was $67 million for the four-month period, reflecting the runoff of in-force business during that time. The value of new business for the 4 months was a negative $7 million, reflecting reduced business volumes as a result of uncertainties in the market surrounding the AXA UK life business propositions ahead of the announcement of the conclusions of the Group UK strategic review. This uncertainty also impacted on persistency in the period, although overall operating variances were $27 million positive. Corporate costs for the 4 months increased by $21 million, as explained earlier in the analysis of the IFRS result. Total MTEV profits therefore amounted to $412 million, reflecting $346 million for the Friends businesses in the year and $66 million in respect of the ex-AXA businesses for the 4 months of consolidation. Turning briefly to MCEV profit after tax, as well as strong improvement in MCEV operating results, the MCEV profit after tax for the year also benefited from positive economic experience variances, primarily in respect of equity market performance and the resultant increase in future unit-linked annual management charges. Non-recurring costs were as for the IFRS basis, and the profit for the year benefited from a one-off increase of $46 million in respect of the announced phase reduction in corporation tax rates to 24%. My apologies that we didn't predict it was going to 23% as announced yesterday, but we will, of course, update things in the future to reflect that particular change. The end result of the acquisition in the year, the MCEV after-tax profits, and the payment of dividend to shareholders was a gross MCEV at 31st December of just over $8 billion, including over $1 billion in respect to the international and Lombard businesses. Total group debt had increased to approximately $1.5 billion, reflecting the $500 million of deferred consideration notes and $400 million acquisition finance facility to purchase the ex-AXA businesses. This resulted in new MCEV, net MCEV, of $6.5 billion and an MCEV gearing ratio of 18.7%, compared to our longer-term target of 25 to 30%. The net MCEV equates to an MCEV per share of £4.51 at the balance sheet date. That's quoted after Treasury shares. Looking forward, we've set out a target for the business to achieve an operating return on embedded value of 10% by 2013. Compared to this target, the operating return on embedded value for 2010 was 8.3%, although this did benefit from significant positive operating variances, as I've already outlined. We've identified a number of key areas which we believe will enable us to achieve this return on embedded value target on a sustainable basis, and these were outlined in our presentation on the 23rd of February and by John earlier in the presentation. The core driver will be the targeted improvement in the value of new business. We have set out our targets for key product areas. This is supported by the expected cost of synergies that we announced of $112 million, targeted cash strain reduction, and initiatives to enhance the ongoing capital efficiency of the business. Looking then at the cash in the business, as well as outlining our operational improvement targets in February, we also set out our framework for the management and reporting of cash. Our key objective is to provide transparency on the cash generated in the group and the extent to which it's available without constraint as a shareholder asset. This slide sets out the value of the core components of the framework at the 2010 year end, including how the long-term debt within the group affects the overall MCEV and its component parts. One of the key elements of this framework is free surplus, which stood at $728 million at 31st December 2010. The opening free surplus of the business, of $966 million, was, as one would expect, significantly reduced by the initial investment in the ex-AXA businesses. This reduction of $616 million arises from the fact that the majority of the assets acquired were either in the form of required capital or value of in-force business. The debt taken on to support the transaction, which counts as a reduction in free surplus, was only marginally offset by the free surplus acquired. The operating performance for the year generated $159 million of net underlying surplus, including 4 months' contribution from the Exacta businesses acquired. We estimate that had these businesses been with the group for the full 12 months, the net surplus generated would have been approximately 50 million higher. Whilst there was a positive contribution from underlying surplus generation during the period, other profit impacts reduced the total free surplus by 135 million. This was primarily as a result of the non-recurring items I outlined earlier and the impact of the IFRS adjustments for the actuarial valuation of the pension fund and foreign exchange movements. Non-trading items also had a significant impact on the surplus, the most material being the release of capital from the attributed inherited estate. I'll come back to this shortly. The two other key influences were capital management impacts of 146 million negative and the 136 million cash cost of the shareholder dividend. The reduction in free surplus arising from capital management actions predominantly arises from a change in the group's capital management policy for group required capital, which we've increased to a targeted 160% of group capital resource requirements, excluding WIPIC, the with-profits insurance capital component, from 150%. This increase reflects our view of the increase in operational risk in the business faces as a result of the integration of our businesses and may be revised back to 150% when we feel sufficiently confident of the progress made. A key element of this is the completion of our cash and capital modelling and our planning work, on which we'll update the market in May, as previously reported. Turning then to the re-attributed inherited estate. As we previously outlined, the High Court approved scheme rules require that a test be undertaken every 5 years to determine whether it is possible to transfer any of the RIE from the non-profit fund to the shareholders fund, or to distribute any of the inherited estate retained in the old with-profits fund in the form of special bonuses to policyholders. Following the results of the 5-year testing, the Friends Life Company Board, previously Access on Life, determined that at 31st December 2010, it should make a transfer of 1010 million to the shareholders' fund, net of tax, and make a distribution of 157 million of the inherited estate in the old with-profit fund, split 90% to policyholders and 10% to the shareholders' fund. The 1 billion received by the shareholders' fund will be partly retained to support the required capital of the overall FLC business, 372 million, and to provide working capital of 171 million. The balance of 467 million will be transferred to the group by way of a £300 million dividend and the cancellation of existing loans of 167 million. The total benefit to free surplus is the value of the working capital, the dividend, and the loan cancellation, amounting to 638 million. I will return to the immediate impact on available shareholder cash in a moment. Overall shareholder cash at the end of 2010 was 1067 million, with 836 million held at the FPH level. The overall increase in the year reflects 510 million of dividends from the life companies and the 300 million dividend from Friends Life Company in respect of the RIE transfer. This 810 million increase in cash was offset by 69 million of corporate costs, predominantly interest, and a 48 million net reduction from the overall funding arrangements for the AXA acquisition, and 136 million cash cost of the shareholder dividend in the year. At an FPH level, the increase in available shareholder cash was 746 million before the dividend to resolution and ignoring the impact of transaction financing. The underlying sources of this increase in cash reflect the increases in underlying free surplus and changes in the level of capital held in the business. These were the 159 million of underlying surplus already outlined and 266 million of other operating items and transfers from working capital, offset by the 146 million of capital strengthening. The available shareholder cash also benefited by 467 million as a result of the transfer from the RIE. Whilst only 300 million was paid up directly as a dividend in respect of the RIE, the 167 million of cancelled loans enabled capital that would have been retained in other parts of the group to be released as cash. We're currently updating our capital modelling and planning in light of the 2010 results and we'll update the market in May on our developing capital and cash plans. Finally, I wanted to try and summarise our progress in delivering sustainable cash generation. Firstly, a reminder of our distributable cash target. We aim to generate £400 million of cash per annum at the FPH level before the payment of dividend to resolution, but after interest costs borne by FPH, without reducing the MCEV of the FPH group. Interest costs in FPH are included as a reduction in VIF emergence and are therefore allowed for in calculating the underlying surplus as reported. Based on our actual preliminary results, the cash generated at FPH level before payment of dividend to resolution was £746 million in 2010, as I've just outlined, of which £159 million was underlying surplus and £587 million was effectively from capital releases. On an annualised basis, we'd expect the 2010 underlying surplus to have been approximately £50 million higher, but the result for the year only included the ex-AXA businesses for the 4 months. John has outlined our targeted improvements at product level, which we target to deliver a £200 million decrease in cash strain overall, and we expect dividends from non-UK businesses to be £50 million per annum from the end of 2013. These operational improvements give us confidence that we have increasingly sustainable cash flows that enable us to reduce our dependency on capital releases in the delivery of our cash target. Based on this confidence, we propose the increase in dividend 15% on a full-year basis, and we'll continue to evaluate the potential to move to progressive dividend policy by the end of the UK Life project. On that note, I'll hand you over to Clive.
Which bit, Jim? That's all right. Okay, thank you, Jim. Well, those of you who have been coming to resolution presentations of the last few years will know that there's almost no limit to the amount of time I'm prepared to wax lyrically on about our plans and ambitions going into the future. But I'm very aware that what you've seen today here is the first consolidated set of accounts being reported back on this UK Life project since the AXA transaction. I know you'll want to spend lots of time on detailed and specific questions, and so I'm going to limit myself here just to a couple of minutes, if I can, just giving you the broadest background for what's happening outside. Mike has already looked at his watch to see if 2 minutes is exactly what I will achieve this in. A brief reminder for those of you with memories good enough back to December 2008, when the whiff of cordite was in the air and financial firms were looking like they would be going through a large amount of almost immediate restructuring. You'll remember that into that background, Resolution put forward its plans to form a new public company, loosely called by the markets Resolution 2, that would focus on a number of different restructuring projects across different areas of financial services. We listed those areas as being life assurance and savings, asset management, broadly and loosely the banking and banking-type product areas, and also reinsurance and general insurance, depending on cycles and aggregation opportunities. Off we went with a single vehicle that we thought might allow us to do a number of those projects over the next few years. We also said straight away we thought the first immediate priority was to get something going in the UK life sector, where there was still a much-needed consolidation and a much-needed bringing of discipline to the sector in order to ensure that other companies, not even just those that Resolution would end up consolidating, but other companies would begin to move their direction and their rhetoric and their actions towards cash generation rather than wasting shareholders' money on the pursuit of loss-making new business. So those were our broad statements about where we felt the public markets could best be served by Resolution. And as you've seen in the last 2 years, we've implemented on that plan and got the UK Life project up and going. The structure we put together for that was one in which investors would always want, we felt, to get specific reporting on each new restructuring project. And so you can see this rather cumbersome project structure here that had the idea that each project, UK Life, European Asset Management, whatever, would be in a separate holding company so we could give specific and identified reporting to it. Of course, that did mean that all of those holdings would, however, be reflected in a single and blended share price, and that over time you'd begin to get a restructuring stock that would reflect the state of progress on a UK Life project, state of progress on other projects as well, and all of those nets would feed into a single share price. As the UK Life projects got underway, we've got real traction, we've got utter clarity of our returns, and we're very focused on delivering them and being seen to deliver them right on time, right on target. We have become less happy, and investors, I think, have become less clear that they would want to have such a blended return, that instead what they might prefer is not just separate reporting, but separate stock prices. And so that's the conversation that is ongoing at the moment with investors. We only work with investors, they're our partners, we have no